Uh-oh.
Indeed, uh-oh.
Uh-oh is always a good thing, right? Well, almost always a good thing.
Yeah.
Most of the time. Most of the time, uh-oh is a good thing.
It depends. If there's a lot of bathroom incidents that go with uh-oh. So that's just, especially being a dad and whatnot.
Well, I just went through some drama with my cat, and I won't go into details, but she was sick. I was worried. I wasn't online very much because I was spending a lot of time with my cat. It involved me desperately hoping she would go to the bathroom, and she did, and it was an incident. But you know what? Despite the mess, despite the horrible bits of cleaning that I had to do, I was overjoyed, you know? So that was an uh-oh that was followed by a oh joy. Oh great happiness.
I suppose, yeah. Uh-oh isn't exactly the cry of oh no, kind of,
Right.
you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. I suppose you're right. I guess uh-oh isn't typically that bad.
Or oh boy, if you want to do the Quantum Leap thing. Did you ever watch Quantum Leap?
Little bits here and there. I never really followed it in detail. I don't know what I was doing during those years. Was that like the early
The
90s?
90s, like late 80s, early
Late
90s.
80s, early 90s? Yeah.
I only watched it recently. It's on Netflix, and I wound up watching it like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and I walked into it with my arms crossed, like, I don't know about this. It's going to be just, what's his name? Dr. Sam Beckett dressed as a woman every other week. But I found myself getting pretty drawn into that series.
That's
But
funny.
the running gag is it always ends with him leaping into another lifetime, and then he's always in the middle of this really crazy situation, and then he looks in the mirror and sees his new body, and he always says, "Oh boy." And that's the end of every episode. So, oh boy or uh-oh, both of those are good.
Yes.
Okay, so anyway, you've been tracking your sleep.
Yeah, I have been. Let's see. Gosh, what has it been like? What, 3, 4 months now? Do 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 do. I'm trying to look up the app on my iPhone. Oh yeah, Sleep Cycle by Maciek Drzak Labs. So, a fellow or fel or gal guys or gals with Eastern European names, I think. So, that's cool. Really sweet app, but you have to get used to the idea of sleeping with your phone. It seems like such baloney that, oh, whatever. If I put my, it's basically, I've used my phone as an alarm clock now for a long time.
Oh yeah, me too, yeah.
And so I thought, well, okay, it's nearby. Why not give it a shot? I mean, it literally will, because a lot of smartphones have sensors in them, like, motion sensors and, they're able to sense like
Gyroscopes.
gyroscopes, exactly. Yeah, sense various degrees of motion and whatnot.
Compasses.
Yeah, and so basically, this thing can tell when there's motion near it because of, it's on the bed, you're on the bed, you move, you affect things on the bed to some extent. And it's clearly sensitive enough where it can detect that. So you get to see these charts of like when you were still, when you moved, and I believe it's associating that with just models of how people sleep. And so it's inferring, this is my rough understanding, trying to decompose what it's doing without actually reading about it, but don't attempt this at home. Yeah. Professional on a closed course. Anyway, the it seems to essentially associate that then with various depths of sleep, right? So,
Okay. So it's not like tracking like your REM hours or anything like that. That's where I'd
not
be.
quite. It's implying them though.
Okay.
And actually, I had it. I was assuming it's kind of funny. I hadn't read about sleep in many years, actually, and I still haven't done a ton of reading on it. Because I just wanted to gather the data and see what the heck I could discover from that. I mean, I do that a lot in all sorts of other areas in life. I mean, and professionally, I gather lots of data to help do evidence-based design. And not that I'm, you know, a believer in being a slave to only one approach in design or whatever, but the evidence really, really helps, especially when you're collaborating across a lot of different people or whatnot. And because why, you know, what's so helpful about evidence? Who cares? Well, it's perspective outside your own, right?
Yep. It's a way to get perspective outside your own. And oftentimes, let's be careful about this. Oftentimes it's, if it's fact-based evidence, it's kind of indisputable, right?
Yeah.
It depends on how you cook the books. Like, that can affect it, right?
Measurement affects, yep.
But, you know, you can, if you have cold hard facts, you can make all sorts of deductions, or at least, like, provide new inroads to thinking about something.
Exactly. Which is, again, just perspective. Because, yep. And that's really helpful, because I don't know. I've been a night owl almost my entire life. And and so I'm really comfortable with that. And I'm very used to going sleep deprived for various reasons, for, you know, being, you know, having a day job, having family, and then, you know, still seeking time for creative endeavors and whatnot. Sleep is often this thing that, I'm no longer of this stance, but I remember, like, I think I even mentioned this on, maybe it wasn't an extra lean. It would, like, we did sort of like the prototype extra lean. Yeah. I feel like we had this conversation on mic before, where when I first moved out and I was in my first apartment, or whatever, I was like, I'm never going to sleep again. And I was giddy and just kind of just did some terrible boogieing around. I was so excited that I didn't have to, you know, encumber myself with all these silly rules and whatnot.
all these conventions.
Exactly.
Of model citizenry.
You and your sleep. Yeah. Well, you know, let's see, the longest I've stayed up is what? Probably I was going into my third waking day.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was across three different days, but I think it added up to something not quite 40 hours. I don't know.
Okay.
Something like that. It was like, no. And it was a little over 40. It was like, whatever. I forget. It was long. It was time to hallucinate long.
Yep. Okay. I was going to ask, did you hallucinate? Because the longest I ever stayed up was around the same amount of time. I worked a 36-hour shift once. I worked 36 hours in a row. And I know I was up for several hours before that. So
I'm totally mucking. So each day is 24. Yeah. Because this was, yep. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, the longest shift I ever worked was 32, but yeah,
okay.
I never worked 36, but yeah.
Well, it's only 4 hours more, but that 36th hour was when my body just said, nope.
Yeah, and there's your body's like, what are you doing? And so how did you shut down? Like, was it graceful or was it?
No, it was, I sat down in a chair for a second. I like kind of like, so I seem to rub my temples.
I just need to fix my glasses.
Yeah. I need to sit down and rub my temple just for a second. I was lucid, and I was like, I gotta sit down for a second. Just like, oh, I gotta work out this headache. And then the next thing I knew, I was in a car and my coworker was taking me home. And like the whole way I'm seeing all sorts of weird things. You know, it was very, very, yeah. Never again. But and I was like, what, 21 when I did that? Like, my body could take it. There's no way I could pull it off now.
You could take it and having survived for a month on Twinkies.
Yeah, yeah. I think that all I ate was just junk food the whole day, you know, so, or the whole 3 days. But anyway.
Yeah.
Sleep. You're tracking sleep.
Right. Anyway, so I guess I have a long-term dysfunctional relationship with sleep. I mean, that's one way to put it. And there's plenty of anecdotes to back up that I have evidence to back up my perspective on my dysfunctional relationship with sleep. And so I needed more evidence to start gaining insight on, like, well, what's happening at night? Am I getting good sleep? You know, cause I notice some mornings I wake up really well. Why is that? How the heck is it that some mornings I feel like the transition from sleep to awake is seamless,
mm-hmm.
and others way not seamless.
Mm-hmm.
What in the heck is the difference there? And so I actually, it's kind of funny because I didn't even get a chance to gather the data before I was able to feel the effect. Why? Because the silly app pays attention to your sleep rhythm and doesn't try to wake you up. It wakes you up within a window of time, right? Where the time you set is the maximum late time. But then what it does is it's within a window near that time, and it will do this when you're ready to wake up.
What?
It's nuts. And it feels great, and you should just, it's a reason to, and I know, here's what's the good news, bad news. I don't know what, how cross-platform there are different solutions for this. And there's a lot of lookalikes in the iOS App Store. Like, so, okay, so we should actually, well, I will make sure we put a link to the show notes, link to the show notes in the show notes, just to help everybody. Sleep, everybody.
I think you have to go to the show notes to get the show notes.
Exactly.
Sleep cycle alarm clock from Maciek Drejak Labs.
Exactly. Health and Fitness. Yes. Okay. That full
yep. Sleep cycle alarm clock. Well,
so
damn it.
It's crazy because what it does is it does this ramp up too, right? Mm-hmm. Where it doesn't just go blah blah blah, here's the intense alarm or tweet 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 or whatever thing you'd like. You pick, and I experimented, actually, what's funny is I experimented both with my own music and with some of the built-in tunes, and the built-in tunes worked better.
Really?
Yeah.
So you didn't wake up to Number of the Beast?
I've woken up to 22 Acacia Avenue, Number of the Beast, Peace Sells, But Who's Buying? the metal song this time that I tried that it didn't work because it's kind of ink. As much as I love that intensity, it just wasn't fitting, especially how it was trying to be used. Because what this app will ramp it up, right? Mm. And so it just was kind of weird. Where, oh gosh, it was Amon Amarth, Twilight of the Thunder God, which is basically epic Nordic death metal.
How does Kate feel about that?
Supportive, thankfully. She actually gets up a little earlier before me, so it's not like... So my alarm doesn't introduce her to the waking time, typically. But,
because this is an important topic, what you use for your alarm music. But I need to change mine anyway, because I'm finding that I'm wrecking some of my favorite music by making it my alarm, right? So, like... For the longest time, it was the Challenge of the GoBots intro music, which has like this one, I won't even go into it, but I love the big horns, okay? But now whenever I hear that first little ramp up of the horns, I'm like, oh, that's wake up time. Oh, I got to hit the snooze button, you know?
It's funny how that happens.
I'm making a bad association with a song that I love. So I'm like, I need to put something really annoying on there.
Well, and this is actually neutral. It has a I don't know, something about like 10 built-in different overall more soothing than intense wake-up music choices. But anyway, what this made me realize is like it's literally just like the so I didn't even get a chance to gather data to reflect on it, to figure out the mystery. It just accidentally helped me realize, you know what? Don't force yourself awake when you're not ready to wake. And I always thought that was some cheeseball in-flight magazine, thought where, I mean, I've seen alarm clocks that like slowly turn on the lights and stuff like that. And I'm like,
But this actually, you wake up feeling pretty okay.
Yeah. And I was completely skeptical and I don't know. And so the thing is, if you have the iOS device, this is $2 worth trying. You know what I mean? It's
actually the one I found is just $1.
$1?
Yeah.
That's so then it's even cheaper than when I bought it. That's crazy. So, anyway, and so I went from that. Now I actually use that plus the Jawbone Up Band.
which is that's one of those like motion trackers that tracks how much movement you're doing throughout the day.
So basically, I wanted something to just give me this number of that frustrates me about it quantifies my inactivity and makes me want to do something about it.
That's so funny because that's what the quest for this quest number 7 that we're working on now, that's what that's all about, is quantifying your time.
Yep.
Finding out how you're using it.
And that's this whole, which I don't know. I barely remembered the term, but I know like a lot of this kind of, these concepts are related to that whole quantified self movement thing.
Okay. Question.
Yeah.
Why do you think it bugs people so much when people get into this kind of stuff? Because
I think it's sunk cost fallacy and fear of change.
You think that's really what's behind it?
A lot of it, yeah. I mean, that's what drives us a lot of tension with any of our deep, our closely held or convenient beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, I don't want to question that.
That's the sunk cost fallacy?
Yeah, well, yeah, partially. I mean, so sunk cost is like, I've already done that thing. I've got a thing that works for me, and it's worked for me for how long? And so I've got so much invested in this approach. When do you really, you know? It's $2 and put your phone near your pillow. And then this overall movement, I don't know. I think there's multiple places. So other places it's extra work to do this stuff. Like, and then that's a natural place to encounter friction where you're like, you know, I've never been great at like tracking calories, for instance, because there's no robot that follows me around to do it for me. I have to like think of the data, look it up, enter the data.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. And unless you want to sit there and hold up every box of, you know, cereal, yogurt, carton of milk, and whatever, and measure out the exact amounts that it says to make sure that you're actually counting the calories properly, which nobody does, right? Or few people do.
I think some people do manage to. And some apps actually make it easier to enter the data.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. Like I might be able to do, like maybe I could challenge myself into doing a week for that kind of thing. Maybe.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it's the big eye opener for me was using David Say's Emergent Task Planner and just having some data on how I was using my time and when I took breaks and being honest with myself and marking when I took a break. And I was marking where I was with my pages, right? So like page 16, panel 2 pencils, stop. Half hour break. Why did I need a half hour break there? Right. At the time, I'm just recording. I'm not thinking about it. I'm just like, look, I got to get away from this desk for a second. I'm going to freak out. And then after the fact, when I would review, like in a week later, like, okay, well, there's a break there. Let's look at page 16, panel 2. Oh, well, look at that shot. That's a shot I'm really uncomfortable with. I'm not really used to that. So I was procrastinating. I was getting away from it. Or it's like, oh, look at this. I was trying to do this pose that I normally can get, but there's like all these ghost eraser marks that wasn't landing it. I wasn't feeling it at that moment. Okay, what time of day was it? Oh, it was 1 p.m. Does that happen a lot at 1 p.m.? Let's find out.
Right. That's huge. So that's like a structured journaling where, logging activities. I mean, that's something you probably already had some familiarity with just from, you know, doing freelance work, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Because early on, when I didn't know any better, I charged by the hour. And so I would give itemized timesheets to my clients. So
okay. Yeah. And I guess it depends on the. Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I would log my hours that way. I guess, yeah, I never thought of it that way, but I guess I was doing that back then. Like as early as 2002.
Cool. Yeah.
But I mean, how much nicer would it be? I know there's apps for your desktop that do this, like Rescue Time, I think is one of those ones, right?
Mm.
Where it just tracks when what you're doing and how long you're doing things. But I'd love to have a robot that says, okay, here's a, you know, a timesheet and here's a pie chart and here's a bar graph charting all of the time you spent this week. How do you want the report, you know, visualized? What data do you want to specifically focus on? Oh, that'd be the best.
That would be awesome. I have tried a variety of those apps. And I've not found one that automatically tracks my activity very well. You know, even for, days where I'm using my laptop pretty much the whole workday.
Mm-hmm.
It still has just too many, there isn't like a clear enough mapping as far as my activity and the meaning for which I'm using a different application. So there's still a loss of that data.
Well, and then for me, I'm half on and off the computer. Half of my day is at my physical drawing desk doing pencil work, and then the other half is digital. Dude, this is something that I think Google Glass, when it matures, could possibly do for us. Boom. Camera on your head.
I mean, if it has some system for, well, for instance, if you could say, you know, now I'm planning. Now I am designing. Now I am, you know, and it's like, if you could do a little bit of annotation, because a lot of that, because think about what happens when you capture video, and it's not, you know, there's no metadata in there. Like, you have to pretty much add the metadata before you can make it really usable.
Yeah.
So maybe, but that wouldn't be that crazy. I don't know. Maybe that's just hitting a button and saying a word into Google, you know, Google Glass hears it. And
or some similar technology, but I mean, like some kind of head-up display. Like, I'm kind of neither here nor there about the whole Google Glass thing.
Yep.
I don't sneer at it, but I don't really see like an immediate use case where I'm like, oh, I got to drop $300 on this thing. Hmm. But I do think about how, Art Desk streaming your workday. It's a no-brainer. That is amazing. That would be so cool to see artists like basically having like a wall of screens of like 20 different artists all working and be able to look at that. How cool would that be? How fun would that be to watch? But then like when you're talking about this quantified self thing, like if camera, the recognition on these cameras, like the image recognition of the Google servers is getting better, other services are going to pop up like that where it can infer more and more based on what it sees. But yeah, also just like a simple announcement, you come up with a schema, right? And you say like, okay, penciling, right? And then like, I'm taking a break now, take the glasses off, go take your break.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think that would be, we're probably not that far off from having that kind of thing. And I just want to point out too, like some of these things, they aren't all or nothing. You still can have a lot of benefit from just doing this for a day. Or like that's where the Quest is that you came up with recently is awesome. Where, it reminds me of when I was trying to figure out how do I better estimate when it comes to building websites, or it was something like that at the time, and I just wanted to have a lot more accurate quoting mechanism for that, and I needed to do a little bit of journaling to back it up. But did I forever journal from every single thing I ever did related to a website from that day forward? No,
and I haven't used the Emergent Task Planner in months because I don't feel like right now I need it to keep on task. I learned an awful lot from it, and I feel like if I ever start feeling like I'm out of control with my schedule, like out of control, and I feel like it's my fault, right? It's not like, oh, a car crashed into my house, and now I'm 2 weeks behind on my work. Gosh, I better break out the ETP because I just don't know where my time went. But like, if it's a situation where there's been no catastrophes and I find myself behind and I'm like, okay, where's this time going? Then it's time to break it out again and find out what's going on in my head. But I don't think that kind of journaling needs to be like a ritual necessarily. It'd be something where you have like a warning sign that goes off and then you say, okay, time to do some journaling, figure out what's going on here.
Yeah, that's, you reminded me of, I think, God, there's so many different, I don't know if this habit's related or not, but that's why I'm hesitating. But, you're mentioning journaling and, and I thought like it'd be neat to essentially, I'll do this at a project level, but you know, where it's like, well, what's my intent for this project? Where are the goals and whatever? And I facilitate that kind of process often, you know, for day job kind of stuff. But like, that's at a project level, where what if I had some kind of thing asking me certain questions at certain times of day, right? So it's almost like I was surveying myself from time to time, right? Or I had something trigger, like do some, write 700 words now and just get prompted, a few times a week, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what would come of that? That's pretty unstructured, right? So like maybe there's structured ways to do it where I just ask myself, well, what's my mood or something? And I have, you know, so then I could report on that stuff pretty easily, but then this unstructured data could be interesting too. Cause then I get to see like, well, you know, what am I thinking about that I'm not really bringing to the forefront? Maybe. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, that's true too. I mean, like, you know, as science is, sometimes results are null, right?
Yeah.
Results are, you know, what's the word for it when it's non-distinguishable or, oh my God, I'm so tired. Inconclusive. Inconclusive.
It was inconclusive. Boy, there's a lot of inconclusive things.
Sure.
Yep.
But yeah, but it's funny that like whenever I would bring up the ETP to people and I would be, and just like how you talked about the sleep app and you're like, oh my God, it worked. And I was like that with the ETP. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta tell everybody about this. I'm learning so much about my workflow and I've gotten so many benefits out of just writing down a stupid thing every half hour. And people are like, whatever. You want me to write down something every half hour? That sounds like a pain in the butt. Like, really? Doesn't really seem that way. And as a matter of fact, another benefit was it made me more mindful of my workday. Because I was tracking it and I was making a point to every half hour check in on this thing.
So why do you think people, what's your, like you're reminding me of what you asked me earlier about.
Original question.
Yeah. What the resistance to that, like, well, what's your impression as far as why people go, nah, or push back?
I would take what you said, sunk cost fallacy, and then resistance to change. And I would layer on top of that a fear of, what's the word? I guess geekiness. You know, like geeks and nerds are like cooler than they've ever been in like probably over 100 years. You know, I don't know if I can't speak for the 1850s. Maybe it was a time, but even then, I don't think geeks and nerds were all that cool. But now they're enjoying like kind of like a little bit of a uptick of stylishness, but to a point, and being, you know, like really interested in being a lifelong learner and being interested in what's the next thing I got to learn, I think still carries with it some negative baggage of being. You know, you just can't settle down and be cool like the rest of. Well, let's take the word cool for a second because I think about this word a lot. Well, mostly because I've never felt cool, as I think most people don't feel cool. And when you're a kid, it bothers you, and then when you're an adult, you're supposed to be okay with it. And sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. But cool means what? It means disconnected, unconcerned, aloof, right? Disconnected. Be cool. Don't be so uptight and concerned and worried about everything that's going on around you, right? I mean, that's where the term comes from.
I suppose. Yeah. So you're talking about the connotation, the denotation more than the connotation, because I don't feel like that's the meaning, because I say the word cool a fair amount.
So do I.
Yeah, but I don't mean that.
Right. But like the origin.
But you're right as far as, yeah, I bet. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it comes from that like that Hepcat era or wherever. I don't know the exact, you know, point of origin, but it comes out of that 1950s kind of like be cool, daddy-o, you know, be unconcerned, be disconnected. And so then you think about like somebody who's like, oh, I want to learn the next thing. I'm really excited about the next thing. Well, that's not being cool. That's being excited and alert and motivated. And, you know, there's a cultural bias against that. You know,
yeah.
It's subtle, but I detect it all the time. I mean, as somebody who has been very, very excited his whole life and has constantly run into friction because of that, I've detected it a lot.
Huh. I wonder if it comes from, I way overuse this tool. But I think of three primary models for, you know, cognitive processing of stuff. And, you know, we've got the sort of the raw lizard animal way of processing the environment. We've got our rational approach to processing, you know, things in the environment. And we also have the emotional side. And I see a lot of creative processes that are driven, you know, with a heavy emphasis toward emotional or rational, typically, right? And I often see a lot of conflict with that. So like, sometimes when I hear be cool, I hear you're thinking too much, right? Mm-hmm. And the right way is the gut way. Don't worry about these other things. And sometimes, and what's funny is I've seen, you know, sorry folks who always operate out of your gut, I'm analyzing you. Well, and sometimes you're right, and they do awesome things, right? But it's more out of a place of instinct.
Mm-hmm. But I think that fulcrum point of be cool, that leveraging somebody's energy against them, can be used as a weapon against anybody about anything. You're thinking too much. Be cool. You're too excited. Be cool. You're too unhappy. Be cool. Right. Disconnect yourself from it. And don't get me wrong. I mean, as a guy who is, you know, can I say it? I into the Buddhism and the Taoism and stuff. That is precisely what you're aiming for, right? Nirvana is being cool. Like in the original, you know, interpretation of the word, being completely disconnected and thereby becoming connected to everything, right? Taoism too, right? I'm like an idiot. My mind is so empty. If the smell of music or the sound of music or the smell of good cooking can attract you, but the moment you're attracted, you realize that you're living in the binary world of good and bad, and the true Taoist goes beyond good and bad, disconnects themselves from those things. They're cool, right? So
there's aspects. Okay, what I would argue is like clearly there lies benefits in the approach and in the state of being and in the results that can come from either perspective.
Yeah.
So
lovely.
Yeah.
You capped it.
I did.
That's the lid being screwed on.
Okay.
And safety sealed for your protection by Rob Sensinger.